Welcome to the Daily News Podcast with host Daniel Beard.
Hello and welcome to the Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Beard, and one of the editors of Share Moving Media's Daily News. Today, we welcome Graham Garrison. He's the editor of the Journal of Healthcare Contracting magazine and the managing editor of Repertoire magazine. Graham, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. We're certainly in an interesting and in some ways unprecedented news cycle.
Yes, that we are. It has been some very different weeks for us, for sure. Today, we're focusing on COVID-19 test kits, how health systems and their supply chains are responding to the pandemic, and how the healthcare supply chain is holding up. Graham, you've been in contact with manufacturers and suppliers this week as the pandemic spreads across the country. What's the latest on COVID-19 test kits?
It's a very fluid situation. I reached out to our physician office lab columnist for Repertoire magazine, which is geared toward distributor reps that are servicing physician offices, but he has a pretty good handle overall on the physician office lab scene in both physician offices and hospitals and health systems. So he gave me a little bit of a background on what's happening as of early this week. So all the testing for the coronavirus in the United States is under the direction of the CDC. And there are presently, I believe, four methods approved, but that's changing and it could change by the hour. So the first method is the CDC-created method, which has been sent to public health labs. And then Roche, Thermo Fisher, and Quidel have approved tests. And I think more companies are working to achieve emergency use authorization for clearance for coronavirus tests because, I mean, the situation demands it. From what I understand, there are no physician office available tests. Physicians have directives on who to refer to for testing. And some hospitals are doing some unique things like either coming up with makeshift tents outside or doing drive-through testing. What'll be interesting to see is how quickly we're able to ramp up the tests. I was reading an article by Wired where the manufacturers think that they can ramp it up pretty dramatically. Roche said something to the effect of they had 400,000 tests ready to be shipped and plans to manufacture 400,000 more per week. And then Thermo Fisher reps said that they have 1.5 million of their own tests available with a goal of producing 5 million per week by April. But what's going to be interesting is some of the components of the tests, we're going to see a strain on the supply chain. Kaiser Permanente had on their news service that two of the top makers of highly specialized swabs used to test patients, they're straining to keep up with demand, to the point where the government may have to step in and ask them to manufacture those exclusively. I don't think they've gotten to that point, but that's certainly something that they're going to have to look at. So unprecedented demand, manufacturers really working hard to get the tests out there. And hopefully as they do, we'll have a better grasp on how much this has spread.
It's just such an unprecedented time and such a concerning time and kind of expanding beyond those COVID-19 test kits. How are you seeing health systems and their supply chains responding to the pandemic overall?
There's a lot of transformation going on. And I noticed this personally too, which I'll get to in a second. But the first item is we're seeing a postponement of elective surgeries. In the Atlanta area where we're based, Emory Healthcare on Monday, they have about 10 hospitals and clinics in Metro Atlanta, announced that they were starting a two-week postponement of all elective surgeries and some procedures, things like colonoscopies, to free up resources. And then Piedmont, which is another health system in our area, announced that it was canceling elective procedures to conserve resources and limit potential exposure for staff and patients. Kaiser Permanente has temporarily shuttered nearly half of its clinics in the Atlanta area, according to AJC. And then we also posted this on the JHC blog that Intermountain Healthcare and University of Utah Health announced that they'll start to postpone certain non-urgent elective medical procedures. these hospitals and health systems are trying to brace themselves for an expected surge. So they're doing everything they can to mitigate any supply shortages via that. And I had a personal experience with that late last week as all this breaking news related to COVID-19. My son was playing what ended up being the last baseball game of the season probably and broke his arm. So I had to take him to urgent care where I got a firsthand look at how an urgent care facility that was connected to one of the local health systems was dealing with it and what questions they asked. They had a lot of questions where they wanted to screen you about who you've been in contact with, what your symptoms were, if you've been traveling, that sort of thing. And then referred us after the x-ray to one of their facilities, but in order to get them looked at by an orthopedist and get a cast on. But they didn't have any availability that Friday, so they recommended a Monday. And I just saw with all the headlines and everything happened, I was like, you know, we have a few other options. I want to see if we can get them in on Friday. And we were able to get them in, was able to get it cast. But what was interesting is the directions they gave us, and they told us that we were one of the first people to get these directions, were he's going to be in cast for 3 weeks, but in the event that we're not able to get an appointment in 3 weeks because they're shut down, they gave us instructions on how to remove the cast.
Wow.
And they were, and I'm sure they're not going to be doing that in every instance. It'll depend on case by case, but that's kind of the reality is elective surgeries or things that aren't critical or emergency, there's going to be changes. I had a friend who was trying to schedule knee surgery at a torn meniscus, and his physician told him he needs to wait 2 weeks and they'll reevaluate to see if they have availability or permission to do that. So a lot of hospitals and health systems are going through that. So that's one
thing. And it's really, he probably doesn't even have a guarantee that he'll get an answer in 2 weeks either. It's just kind of a, you know, get back with us in 2 weeks sort of thing.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah, no guarantees for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we're seeing, new visitation restrictions from hospitals and health systems, and a lot of them started implementing that last week too. In fact, I spoke with a nurse at a local hospital who mid shift, I think this was Thursday, they changed the visitor policy to one person. So there are plenty of people at the hospital that got an awakening of sort and were asked to leave, not through any fault of their own, but just because the medical providers are trying to take really great precautions. And it leads to the third thing, which is staff. Like, it's going to be absolutely imperative that we keep our caregivers healthy and safe. So infection prevention supplies, proper protocols, making sure that they're not too overworked. I mean, we've got a pretty big challenge. And I think our readers, distributor reps and repertoire and supply chain teams and leaders and JHC have a critical job to be able to keep the caregivers that they support in a good frame of mind and well supplied.
So when you went in with your son last week when he broke his arm, I'm sure they were screening everybody, patients and visitors that they came in the door with them, correct?
By screening, they were asking questions. We didn't receive any tests or anything. I didn't ask them what their COVID-19 procedure was. I don't think they had tests at that facility. But they were asking a lot of questions. And fortunately, I guess I answered them correctly. You know, I haven't traveled. We haven't had any symptoms, but we're like everybody else this week. We've got kids home doing digital learning. Right. Got two parents that are working at their jobs, and we're trying to practice social distancing.
You know, we've spoken about the health systems and the frontline workers, but how is the healthcare supply chain holding up amid the crisis?
Yeah, I've spoken to several people and GPOs, providers, and different associations. Mike Schiller is somebody that responded to some questions we sent out, and he's the senior director of the Association for Healthcare Resource Materials Management. He said that personal protective equipment, no surprise, including gowns, gloves, respirator masks, and then blood supplies are the most affected categories right now. He said it's been projected that there are over 1,900 med-surg items and pharmaceutical items on allocation. So ARM is one organization that's working with healthcare leaders, other associations, suppliers, and distributors, sharing information and solutions. And I've read different individual hospitals and health systems and what they're trying to do when it comes to personal protective equipment. Becker's Hospital Review had a report of some Providence, Rhode Island-based Lifespan is telling clinicians to wear the same protective masks for 2 days, according to one of the local news stations. Clinicians don't need to wear them 2 days straight, but should get 2 days of wear out before disposing them. And then we're seeing in some of the states that are hardest hit, like Washington, Washington State's congressional delegation sent a letter to the Health and Human Services Secretary about the state's need for more personal protective equipment to want to tap into the strategic national stockpile. Their reasoning was that health centers, nursing facilities, fire departments, and other sectors through the state are either depleted or will run out in a matter of days. That was according to an NPR report. And then another big item is going to be ventilators. There's a lot of estimates out there of how many ventilators we have nationwide. One study was that I read was 62,000, but it was from 7 years ago. And then the question is, how many ventilators do we have in the national stockpile? Ventilators are considered a bridge in recovery, I read in a report, but critical care patients are going to need them. So that, and there's only a finite supply, that's something that we're going to have to monitor. Also, two other things related to the supply chain. Gray market scammers are going to be something that supply chain teams are going to have to be wary of and navigate. And we've got a blog on that from a GPO executive who gave some best practices. And then transparency. We really need transparency of supplies. One executive said that we should be able to track and trace every product necessary for the delivery of care. It can help prevent overstock and understock issues and ensure that we have all supplies in the right place at the right time for the right patient. So hopefully something we'll get out of this is a way to better work together when the supply chain is strained. So you have enough supply, but it's not an overstockpiling or hoarding situation. That's something we'll obviously want to avoid.
And we have so much news coming in every day about this, and really, you know, almost all of it is so sobering. I think it's just very important for us to, decipher it and deliver the news for our readers. So I want to thank you for joining us today, Graham. We look forward to having you on as a regular guest of the Daily News Podcast. Listeners, you can find Graham's COVID-19 pandemic coverage on jhconline.com and repertoiremag.com. And you can find the Daily News in your email inbox each day. Thank you, Graham.
Thanks for having me.